Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and we have a wonderful paradigm shifter tonight. Some of you have paid a lot of attention to her words before. She's known as Soothsayer. Our astrology political wizard guest is Linda Sherman. Good evening, Linda.
Good evening, Veronica.
So there you are in the heart of the storm. Well, not the heart. You're on the edge of the stormland, right?
Yes, we're at the edge of the superstorm,
wow.
Sandy, and it is affecting us, but I don't think as badly as many other parts of the East Coast.
Well, let's get down to brass tacks here, because you said last year and again when we spoke yesterday or the day before or something that we were going to have some big, like earth changes, weather changes, and so on. So it's kind of ironic, isn't it? Here we are with the big storm Sandy right around you, huh?
Yes, it is an irony. But we have a lot over the next years of our lives that are going to be unfolding as the result of global climate change.
Okay.
And we also are in a very active tectonic cycle.
And what does that mean?
Well, it means that there's an increase in the number and severity of earthquakes and volcanic eruptions.
Oh, okay.
And for the past 2 years, this has been the case. The geological survey sites that keep track of all this say that there have been many more and many severe earthquakes over the past 2 years than there have been in a very, very long time.
And so do you think that's a natural flow, a natural process of Earth, or do you think
my opinion is yes.
Okay.
On that, severe, frequent, severe droughts, floods, storms that we're experiencing. My feeling about that is it's more a result of man-made global warming. But I feel that the tectonic cycles that we're experiencing are mostly cycles that come and go whether we're here or not.
You know, I live on the West Coast, as you know, and there was a great big earthquake off the coast of British Columbia 2 days ago.
Yes, there was.
Huge. So we don't have any water from it.
7.9 or something like that.
Yeah.
I have spoken on other shows about the Pluto-Uranus square, which came into orb in April of this year and is very strongly present through November of 2013. And that square coincides with economic depressions, recessions. But it also tends to correspond with an increase when Pluto contacts Uranus, whether it's a conjunction, a square, or an opposition. It tends to symbolize increased earthquake activity. And
you know what,
April,
Linda? We never knew that that's what the shift meant, did we?
Yeah, literally. We think of shifts as a, but consciousness shifts tend to correspond with economic crises and shifts, and also natural crises and shifts. They all are a part of one universe. They're not necessarily separated from one another.
Yeah, they just evidence themselves a little differently because of the size of the beings, right?
I think so. But these earthquake conditions, I mean, Mexico City had a volcano that erupted just outside of Mexico City, and they evacuated most of the city in April. And then I think it was on May 20th, the day of a solar eclipse that was square to Neptune, a small city in Italy was practically totally destroyed by an earthquake.
Wow.
And it goes on and on. There was a major earthquake off of the coast of Costa Rica not too long. I think back in August, early September.
Yes, I remember that.
Yes, and the problem is that many of these events have not been reported on our news media. This is just striking to me that it's only when there's a giant earthquake and tsunami like the one in Japan or the one in Banda Aceh, you know, in Indonesia in 2004, a really, really mega disaster before it gets on our media.
So it's very interesting. This is a very interesting time where we've got these, let's call them the shifts. We've got these either disasters or eruptions or recessions. They're all basically storms, aren't they? And they're in individuals. But aren't they in the systems? Are the systems actually breaking down, Linda, or are they just going to morph and, you know what I mean? What's happening with money? What's happening with media? What's happening with the banksters? Simple questions,
well,
right?
My take on this is that Pluto in Capricorn symbolizes the establishment. By that, I mean our great institutions, the government, the people in power in government, and the coalition of transnational capitalists, most who originate in the United States, and what I call banksters, that are controlling the giant monopoly corporations who escape taxation by offshoring their profits and escape having to pay a labor force a decent wage by offshoring the labor force to cheap labor abroad, and escape having to comply with environmental laws because they go to countries where there are no environmental laws. This includes, by the way, the oil companies, the gas companies as well, who are busy cannibalizing the whole planet, no matter what the environmental consequences are. The banks, as we know, have played out historically, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and many others have been in the what I constantly refer to as the derivatives market. And derivatives, I like to explain to many of our listeners, in the financial world, are not buying or investing in a stock or buying a bond or even directly buying a currency or gold. What they're buying is a bet. They put a bet. Let's say they think the housing market is, take a concrete example, 2008. A Goldman Sachs bought a put, which is a bet that the housing market would crash. After nearly a decade of being a part of and encouraging subprime mortgages, mm-hmm. and putting those up and so-called financializing those mortgages, it's been standard for one bank to sell another bank a mortgage. In this instance, they put mortgages in people's hedge funds. In fact, Goldman Sachs had them in their customers' funds, subprime mortgages, assigning to them an innate value, which, unless that person over the years pays it off, has no value.
Wow.
And they sold these, by the way, people sold these mortgages to the following nations: Iceland, Greece, Spain, Italy, and Ireland, which, as we all know right now, have either practically gone bankrupt or on the verge of bankruptcy. They sold them in the term of what they call credit default swaps, which is another derivative thing, that they passed the risk from these mortgages onto these nation sovereign wealth funds.
And so wait a sec, you're saying they build up a shaky structure and then bet that it'll fall?
Yes. Mm. And then after all of this selling of these subprime mortgages to these nations, plus the putting them in their own customers' accounts, they bought a massive put or bet contract that the mortgage market would collapse. Now, in the derivatives world, if you make a bet like this, see, a put is a bet that something will fall or fail. A call is a bet that the value of whatever that is will go up. Now, with buying a put, you have to have, in either a put or a call, you have to have what's called a counterparty or somebody that bets the other way that's in on this contract with you.
Mm-hmm.
The counterparty was AIG, the biggest insurance company in the world. So when the mortgage crashed, the whole housing market crashed and the stock market crashed in 08, Goldman Sachs, I forget what the figure was, in the billions of dollars, $28 billion or something like that, that AIG owed Goldman Sachs. And so the federal government, with our taxpayer money, had to bail out AIG, who paid off Goldman Sachs.
Wow.
Now, this is the kind of what I call gaming of the system, manipulating of the system, and then gaming the system. The
But there's no policing. Thing, what about policing it? Is there any
well,
system?
Unfortunately, at the end of the Clinton administration, 1999, the three financial magnates that Clinton had appointed, Robert Rubin, the Secretary of the Treasury, and his assistant, Lawrence Summers, and then, of course, Alan Greenspan as head of the Federal Reserve, they pushed, those three pushed, to deregulate the financial world.
Right.
And they succeed, and the Republicans were 100% behind this and drafted legislation for Congress to get rid of the Glass-Steagall Act that had been passed in the last Depression under Roosevelt, which separated the mortgage lending banking from the betting financial banking industries, so that, if you were an investment kind of bank, you didn't get involved in giving people loans or mortgages. You were strictly in stocks or bonds or derivatives or whatever. So they dropped that dividing line, allowing everybody to get into this free-for-all. Secondly, they passed what they called the Commodities Modernization Act, which took restrictions that had been there for years on the derivatives market, which is buying bets. Now, commodities are very often traded this way, and it had a purpose. Derivatives were not something that should necessarily be bad or forbidden, because farmers, for instance, who had a big soybean crop, and farmers are always at risk of losing their entire crop with drought, as we had last summer, or floods, as we're having now. So what farmers were allowed to do and others were allowed to do is buy puts on the soybean market, a bet that it would go down. So if they would make profits if their crop was good anyway, but if the crop failed, it was a hedge, which is the term hedge fund. It was a hedge against losing everything because they would win on that put that they bought. So these instruments have had value. Don't misunderstand me. But when the regulators went wild and deregulated, I should say the government, what happened was everybody started getting into this derivatives thing where people could make billions and billions of dollars. To give you an example, in 2006, when Bush was president, at the end of the year, the International Bank of Settlements said that the derivatives market was around $360 trillion in notional value, notional until the contract expires or they exercised their option. $360 trillion.
Notional means it's all in your mind. Is that all?
Well, in a sense, yes. Until the contract, it's usually a timed contract.
Oh, okay.
Say you bet that the mortgage market is going to fail within 3 months or a year, or sometimes even 3 years, depending on how the contract is designed. And if you let it expire, it hasn't happened, then you lost. If you exercise your option when it did happen, you exercise your option, then you have won. But at any rate, my point is, in 2006, 6 years ago, that was, and it was mind-boggling, $360 trillion. Today, according to the Bank of International Settlements, that same derivatives market is $700 trillion.
Oh, my gosh. This is after it's all crashed.
And these risks are mind-boggling, the risks that you take on this. For instance, this past year, MF Global, which was a financial entity slash hedge fund organized by the former governor and former senator from New Jersey. And MF Global, that was Senator or Governor Corzine, who was formerly a co-chair of Goldman Sachs. years ago.
Oh my.
He created this MF Global, and he bought a call on Europe, and it was a timed call, a bet that Europe would get better, in a sense. But he used his, which is supposedly against the law, he put all of his clients' money into this, and the government found out about it, so it crashed everything. All of their money was lost. All of the customers' accounts lost all of their money on this risky thing. And the reason, if we had waited long enough, when Europe made a decision to try, at least temporarily, to salvage the euro dollar and the European Union, he probably would have won. But that the government, that people intervened before that. So he lost all this, and he has gotten nothing but a slap on the wrist. J.P. Morgan Chase made a similar bet and lost over $4 billion on that transaction just this year. Now, one of the biggest scandals of all time is Barclays, this enormous, enormous bank / investment firm in England, was caught manipulating and gaming the LIBOR. Now, the LIBOR is the rate at which banks all over the world, the interest rate at which they lend money. So this is a very delicate thing because it affects global banking. And Barclays was caught manipulating it and then betting on it or gaming it. And they were right all the time because they were manipulating it. This is sort of like going to Las Vegas to the roulette, playing roulette, and at the same time having a little thing under the wheel to manipulate it to come out with your number.
But it was affecting the whole world, right?
Yes, it was. And there are likely to be maybe it's estimated 14 other giant banks who are doing the same thing. And if they were all caught and punished, the entire system would come down like an avalanche.
And then what would happen?
Barclays, well, these banks might fail, be closed. You'd have a banking system that would be impossible to insure with FDIC over here or any equivalent thing anywhere else. Now, what did they do? The CEO of Barclays resigned, and they fined them, I think it was somewhere around $300 million, which is nothing to them, a little slap on the wrist, and they continue.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is there really is no policing, is there?
Not anymore. Okay. Not to, now, Dodd-Frank was passed here in the U.S., which at least requires that derivatives trades and things be transparent and be done openly over markets, because there's what's called the dark market in derivatives, where people are sort of going online and making these transactions not over, they're not transparent and they're not over exchanges. The problem is that it was such a weak law, it really hasn't affected that. That's still going on. But the point is that the government got out of regulation. Now, I want to say I'm a registered independent, but if you elect Mitt Romney and the Republicans get in, any rule of law or any regulatory agency will likely be scrapped. It will be an absolute free-for-all.
Because he said that. I heard him say that he was going to deregulate.
Right. Deregulate an already dangerously deregulated system. Mm-hmm. And the issue that we have here is also that the rich aren't paying much tax anyway. Mm-hmm. They find ways to offshore it. The capital gains tax under the Bush tax plan, which we still have to the end of this year, taxes capital gains at 15%. So somebody like Romney can make millions, which he did $22 million, and only pay 15% on it because it's all capital gains. Mm. We pay income tax on salaries or business profits, but because he's in that kind of a business where most of his fortune is in hedge funds, he only pays 15%. And it's really... And then a lot of the money that these guys make and these entities may, it's offshore, the Jersey Islands or the Cayman Islands or places like this who don't tax anybody. They have no income tax. So they create, remember Enron?
Yeah.
Remember the,
oh,
that
yeah.
catastrophe? That was a derivatives company that wrote derivatives on energy.
Hmm.
They started out as an energy company and wound up being a corporation that traded puts and calls on energy.
Well, hang on
and
a second. Hang
had,
on. I want you to tell us what's been happening on astrologically that is pushing. It seems like it's pushing all this, isn't it? Like the Enron thing was a huge mess. The LIBOR, mm-hmm. Barclays Bank, all of the banking and everything is a huge mess, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, different things happened at different times. We had in 2000, we had the dot-com collapse. There was this huge investment in the 90s in these dot-com stocks. And we had that. And in 2001, we had 9/11. When Saturn went, we had this Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Taurus in 2000. And then Saturn went into Gemini, which is traditionally a recessionary thing. And it was in those periods of time that the economy could have again been much worse. People went from dot-com stocks into real estate and started flipping houses and caused this wild, terrible bubble. But these people were finally caught doing this because Enron, for instance, offshored their books, and it was one whistleblowing accountant, a brilliant young woman who is now an author. And a TV, I think she monitors a television show. I forget her name. She blew the whistle. She was an accountant at Enron on the accounting staff and saw that all of their so-called profits, everything were bogus. Didn't make any sense.
Hmm.
So.
And she knew how to reveal that.
She blew the
that.
Whistle.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right. But these times that we're in now, as I said in my first book, What Next? I predicted this. My book was published in June of 2007. I predicted the collapse in the housing market, and by 2008, we'd have a stock market crash and be entering a Great Depression. Why is that? Because Pluto, or any slow-moving planet, when it reaches either at 27 to 29 Gemini or 27 to 29 Sagittarius, historically has corresponded with stock market crashes.
Oh, wow.
And as Pluto went into Capricorn, which is a very stiff down depressionary cycle, this happened at the end of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
It went from Pluto at late degree Sagittarius into Capricorn. Then, more recently, Pluto is now squared to Uranus in Aries, and the last time that happened was the 1930s. So I looked at these historic patterns from the past to see what happened before. And this is how I make my predictions in astrology. Now, you asked me earlier on about the system coming down and threats to the system. I feel that this is true. The last time Pluto was in Capricorn was previous time in the mid-1500s, the Protestant Reformation in Europe, when Martin Luther rebelled against the abuses and corruption in the Roman Catholic Church.
Hmm.
And it took a long time, but it brought the Roman Catholic Church down as being on a political par with the monarchs.
Hmm.
It was a big, big, big event in human history. The last time Pluto was in Capricorn was the beginning of the American Revolution. And the American Revolution started under the end a Pluto in Capricorn and went on when Pluto went into Aquarius, a sign that represents democracy. I said that we are going to come up against a second American Revolution, but it's going to be a long, slow awakening as people in this nation who have been influenced by the media, who is also owned by giant transnational corporations,
oh, no.
whose interest is to sway, either put people to sleep with horrendously bad programs.
Spin, spin, and more spin, yes.
Yes, or to slant the news so that they're not getting news. And the only place you could get it is PBS and NPR, and then online. There's some great online newsletters, truthout.org, commondreams.org.
Move on.
There are a number of great. I recommend reading Matt Taibbi, one of the a young man, a wonderful journalist who is an authority on the world of finance, an investigative reporter who's blown the whistle on Goldman Sachs, and he often writes for Rolling Stone magazine, which
and
is wonderful.
Matt Taibbi.
Matt Taibbi. I believe it's T-A-I-B-B-I.
Okay.
And then you have Bill Moyers, who is a great, great distinguished journalist who's back on PBS now and is also writing articles online. You have good people out there, but they're rare, and they're not in the mainstream media, which is corporate-owned. And since Citizens United was voted on by the Supreme Court in 2010, it's taken all restraints and restrictions off of campaign financing. So billionaire corporations can throw as much money at any person's campaign that they want to get elected so they don't have to pay any more taxes or have any more restraints at all.
So they're just buying the country, aren't they?
Yes, they... This is a terrible ruling, and this is why Romney is getting a lot more money than Obama is, because they believe that Romney will lean more in their favor than Obama. They're scared that when Obama gets into a second term, he no longer is beholden to them.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Goldman Sachs financed a lot of Obama's campaign in 2008 when they saw that he could actually win. I think President Obama, as I've said on other talk shows, was very, very naive and knew nothing of this. And he walks in and he gets hit with everything that the world could hit him with.
I mean, a broken everything. Machine.
But at any rate, in answer, I think our systems, our institutions will come tumbling down. But the cartel is going to fight tooth and nail these top, the one percenters. I think the Occupy Wall Street movement is very hopeful. It hasn't had one television camera on it since its initial beginning last year, last fall. It has had no, it's like they want Occupy Wall Street to disappear, and it's going all over the world. I mean, that Occupy movement and its demands of equal opportunity, and here there's a constitutional amendment to take all private money out of all political campaigns.
I love that.
And I love that notion. But the Occupy movement is still going, and they're cohesive. They've got a lot of very intelligent, knowledgeable people, and they're occupying places all over the country, not doing anything illegal, but still getting arrested by the police, and no cameras are on them.
Interesting. So you're saying that whatever the configurations are that are astrological, that are amping up the deregulation and what you're calling the banksters and the cartel and the power movement that's global, there's still energy for new rising systems is what you're saying, right?
Yes, Veronica, but I feel that we're going to have a lot of consequences of so many years of selfishness, greed, deregulation, going to sleep, allowing the money to be taken away. It's the biggest, since the late 60s, early 70s, the biggest transfer of wealth in our history from the public at large into the pockets of the few has been going on. And it's been going on for such a long time, so gradually, that people are only now beginning to wake up to what has happened to them. And it's going to be a long slugfest. Uranus represents freedom, democracy, liberty, the power of the people. Pluto represents the establishment, especially in Capricorn, which will fight tooth and nail to hang on to its power. And you have those two forces against one another. And my feeling is that real progress in so many ways will begin to be made at the end of this depression cycle, which is December of 2020, under the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Aquarius.
That seems like a long time away.
Well, look how fast the decades have gone, in
yes.
a blink of an eye.
Yes.
Just think about it. How fast has this year gone?
Yeah.
I think we have to think, but I know it's a time away, and I want to say to people out there that my husband and I were committed to living in a sustainable community with progressive, great values, that care about each other, that encourage local entrepreneurship, that believe in education, not just in math and science, but in civics, how to be a citizen, how to be a critical thinker, how to be a human being. And we are dedicated to that now, and there's a lot of people out there that have that level and even beyond of dedication. We have to, on a local level, whatever we can do, however we can change things, we have to start it now, because nothing ever happens overnight. And when these planets change, all the groundwork that we do in our lives now will bring in, usher in the Aquarian age, which I am of the opinion begins truly at that point. Because Pluto will go, will go into Aquarius in 2026.
So you're saying there's a revolution that's going to go on, but it's going to take 20 years or 10 years?
Yes. My feeling is eventually, because Pluto will return to the position of the beginning of this country, and in the position when we won the war, Pluto was in Aquarius and we became a nation. When Pluto last transited Aquarius in the 1700s, we had the American Revolution, the French Revolution, and the Industrial Revolution, plus the Age of Enlightenment. So we had an incredible science, technology started to really happen. That's a very impressive. Pluto is going into Aquarius again in the 2020s. And I am calling this the democratic economy revolution, the energy revolution, and the green revolution.
But 2020. You're saying is that it's actually going on now, but it's just coming up into some kind of sustainability. Is that right?
Exactly. I feel that for a time we need to relocalize and commit ourselves to growing our food locally, organically, to managing and recycling our water, because we're going to have global water crises, either not enough of it or too much of it. It's so polluting with fracking, which is that horizontal drilling for gas using a toxic chemical. Fracking, digging for oil. I mean, Romney would have this nation dug up the environment just so destroyed for a long, long, long period of time. I feel that we're going to get nuclear fusion. We already have hydrogen fusion, but what we have with hydrogen fusion is an awkward way of doing it, an infrastructure, but it's actually been accomplished by the Livermore Laboratories in California. They point 192 lasers at one pellet of hydrogen and release more energy than the world could possibly use with no pollution whatsoever.
Is it dangerous?
And a British this has already been done. It was done in 2011. And in my new book, which is called Fast Forward, I quote that article about that, the description of it. And a company in Great Britain is also joining forces with this, and they want to design a usable infrastructure. If we have that kind of fusion, everything is electricity. We don't have to ever use fossil fuel again. We just, all electric everything, all electric cars. We don't need fossil fuel. And the other fact is that in Switzerland, they have a giant fusion laboratory and accelerator. It was built in the early 1990s, between 1990 and 1992, with the idea that they would have a fusion reaction. Now, for those who don't know what this is, Right now, all of our nuclear plants are nuclear fission, which creates the energy, but at major toxic costs with radioactivity. Nuclear fusion uses everything up, so there is no toxic pollution.
Hmm.
Now, what's going on in our sun is nuclear fusion. To give you an example.
Hmm.
But at any rate, in CERN, Switzerland, the six nations and the European Union have been behind this giant reactor. And I have said in my newsletters, on my book, and on radio shows, that between 2024 and 2026, we will have nuclear fusion, and we will have under the Neptune-Uranus-Pluto trine sextile in the heavens, all those big planets in great aspect to one another will symbolize the energy revolution. We will have fusion, and it is going to transform everything. There was an article in the June Scientific American by a science writer that reported on the one in CERN, Switzerland, that
what
said
called?
They
the
project...
Hebron or something? Hebron, is that it?
Yes. The Hadron Collider. That's a different one.
Oh, okay.
This is specifically designed to create fusion, and the Hadron Collider, that's really interesting because they recently substantiated the existence of the Higgs boson, or what's known the God particle. And I can go back over that too, but
the God particle, you mean, so you can create everything?
Well, this was in the news this past summer, all over the news. And I want to precede it by saying that I predicted in this time the Pluto-Uranus square, with all of the difficulty it produced, the last time it reached an exact square was 1932-33 when we split the atom. The atom was split.
Interesting.
Now, that was huge. That was an enormous breakthrough in physics.
Hmm.
Now, this time, it was exact the end of June. On the 4th of July, it was reported that they had done the experiment and found what is known as the God particle. It's not really a particle. It's an environment in which all creation can take place, that atoms and molecules and all the subatomic particles can organize themselves, that existence, matter, and energy as we know it can happen. It was hypothesized back in the 60s under the last Pluto-Uranus conjunction. And Higgs and boson are two different people. Boson, by the way, is an Indian scientist from India. But at any rate, you can go online and read the whole background about the Higgs boson. It was hypothesized that it existed, and the reactor, the experiment that was done in CERN, Switzerland, substantiated the existence of it.
Hmm.
So that's why they call it the God particle.
So I want to jump into another thing, which is that the way technology has been and the way communications have been, even though the media is sort of controlled and all that, you're talking about the God particle, and I'm saying we have an ability to have a one consciousness in a conscious fashion all around the world right now. Is that sort of the other side? Is that kind of going to lead us to an expansion of consciousness and thought?
I happen to believe that very deeply, that the real solutions to all problems reside within an elevated and expanded and loving consciousness, an intelligence that combines with a heart-centered existence to produce a human being that is extremely advanced in its understanding, its wisdom, its knowledge, its love, and that all the struggles that we're going through right now is nature's attempt to bring us out of our coma, wake us up to see the obvious. That we are one. We are individual manifestations of one conscious energy that is all that is.
Mm.
And that once we wake up to this, humankind will have expressions and experiences beyond things most people even conceive of. Yes, I absolutely think, but I think the timing of this is we're going to have to go through a lot to get there.
I guess I don't know quite where to go. I'm going, what do we do? Just meditate? What do we do? How do we pitch in, Linda? How do we wake each other up?
Well, that's a very good question, and I don't know that there's a simple answer, one answer. I happen to think that daily meditation, relaxation, getting rid of all the, what you might call the roof brain chatter in the head, and relaxing, and then calmly visualizing a white light and love around your loved ones, the people that you know, and then visualizing the white light around the planet Earth itself. I think that that is something that works on a level beneath the frenzy kind of existence that most of us are living today. Mm. I think that the daily meditation, it helps us, it makes us healthier, it wiser, calmer, and helps us to get in touch with our core self. So I'm a great, that is, all I can say is it works for me. And I think that's what it works for you, and it works for people who testify that it works for them.
So now I'm going to jump back into the steamy bits of what's going on. How does the cartel, I mean, how do you predict that the cartel will break down at times and allow for a democratic global consciousness?
They will not do it voluntarily. I do not believe that in any more than monarchs went down. You see, I feel that under the, you know, that in the past we have seen the end of the age of monarchs, the end of the age of, for most places, dictators, although there are a few left around the world, like, you know, the Castros in Cuba. The monarchs are just figureheads today, if they exist at all in nations. The dictators, the communists, exist. You know, there's almost nothing less. Although China still remains a communist dictatorship, but it is admitted capitalism into it.
Sounds like the banks are the dictators right now.
Right now, what we have is American history is filled from the robber barons of the late 19th, early 20th century. They are very selfish. They get into positions of power. They believe that they absolutely can do anything they want in order to become very rich and very powerful. And they're extremely narcissistic by temperament. And they don't care. If you look at what the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, people back then did to the labor force, to other people, to each other, they have a kind of predator-prey concept, and that the current powerful predators are entitled to their predatorship, and the prey are just lazy losers anyway. And this is capitalism, uncontrolled, unrestrained, allowed to grow into giant corporations that we would call the plutocracy today, mm-hmm. named after our favorite planet, Pluto, by the way. Not by astrologers. But today, the robber barons have reemerged, and we now have inequality. We have nobody is really addressing the true causes of the diminishment of the workforce, because not only outsourcing to slave labor abroad, that's only a small part of it. The true cause is automation, is the very wonderful technologies that are replacing whole segments of the job force. Robots are replacing factory workers, and computers are replacing adjacent secretarial help, and on and on. It's the technological revolution is enabling us to do great things, and these kids are graduating college with degrees, and they can't get a job. Mm-hmm. There are only jobs in high-level science and medicine, and the financial world. And usually you're a part of a good old boys network.
Pharmacy.
Yes, that lets you. There is pharmacy. In fact, my grandson is a freshman in college. He's going to go for a pharmacology track and go all the way to get a doctorate of pharmacy, which is a very, very good route to go. But pharmacy, because the pharmaceutical companies are so powerful, that every part of the reason people are taking all kinds of pharmaceutical products to deaden themselves against the abject fear that they have when they look around at what's going on. And a lot of people want to run away from this. A lot of people are not running away from it, but they just, whatever it is, their nervous systems can't take this, and they break down. There's a variety, a whole spectrum of reasons for this, but I think our society is drugged, and we're doped up by television.
And I think our food supply has been broken up.
Mm-hmm. The food supply has been industrialized. It has mm-hmm. become a part of the corporate cartel. And the industrialization and corporatization of farming and food has been an absolute disaster for our health.
Mm-hmm. It really has. It's a very interesting time. So in the middle of it, where's the really positive stuff comes up? Like, for example, we've got the robotics and so on and fewer jobs in a certain area. Ideally, that sets people up to be free to really create some new levels of human existence, doesn't it? But instead, it might,
but in reality, when you're in a, quote, capitalistic society, a capitalistic plutocracy, you've got to have a job to survive.
Yeah,
and who's going to support you doing that? You've got to have some way of making a living that isn't going back to just being a serf digging for potatoes all day.
But aren't there an awful lot of entrepreneurial things going on as well?
I do see that, and I believe in that. I think small business and entrepreneurialism
and local
is
business.
The way, mm-hmm. right, local businesses are definitely the way to go, but we need to rally in our communities. We need to recreate the whole notion of community. We need to grow organically foodstuffs near at hand if we possibly can, whether it's greenhouse gardening or regular farming, to grow food organically close to home. We need to surround ourselves. We need to be less dependent on industrialized farming and big business to sustain us. In order to do that, and we have to encourage, you know, an example of that here, you know, because of electronics, books, paper-made books are going out, down, down, down. I won't say totally out of existence, but they're mm-hmm. diminishing. But books aren't. Books you can read on Kindle or online.
Mm-hmm.
So books are becoming electronic. So the big bookstores that sold a lot of books, like Borders went out of business here where I live in Ithaca. They went out of business everywhere. They went bankrupt.
Right.
And Barnes & Noble is hanging on by their teeth because they're doing a lot of electronic stuff. Now, what happened here where I live was there was a bookstore that was kind of a mom-and-pop business with a coffee shop in it that was losing the battle against Borders. Guess what? It is now thriving.
Oh, wow.
It has one section which has used
That's
books.
Good.
It has another section which has new books. And it has now picked up. People are going who love books are going there. And so
sitting and having coffee.
Uh-huh. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, which, of course, you could get at Borders and Barnes & Noble. They all thought up the idea of having a coffee shop within the store. But local, everybody in Ithaca really wants, most of us here really want to promote local entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
We have, and we do. We're very, very encouraging to that here. All of us have a long way to go. We have to reframe democracy. See, democracy is easier to do closer at hand
mm-hmm.
when it's small. when it gets too big, it's subject to being bought out by the rich and the powerful, which is going on now.
Mm-hmm. But actually, there are communities developing around the country, aren't there? Because I keep seeing that there are seniors communities, and heard a thing on NPR about a neighborhood that turned itself into a seniors community to support one another. And have you heard of, I mean, that's what you're in. You're not in a seniors community, but you're in a community.
No, I'm not. I'm happier not to be, frankly. It's a personal decision, in a senior community, although I'm well into my senior years, because I want to have young people around me. I want to see their youth, and I want to hear their ideas and their problems and their new concepts, and that excites me. I am not, it depends on how the seniors are set up, but I think they need to be very integrated with the rest of the community. You may, for instance, you may have senior housing, which is very user friendly, mm-hmm. having everything on one floor and having things set up so you can age comfortably in your home and all of this. But I believe in my life, I want to be integrated in this country and in the world. I want to be a part of the lives of the young people, mm-hmm. People my age as well, whom I have as dear friends.
But, so you know, I wasn't saying it has to be just seniors' communities. I just think that there is the development of communities going on quietly around the country.
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. And I feel that there are local decisions being made along the lines that we're talking about. You see, a lot is happening, but it's not being reported on by the media, and you can get information frequently online about these things. Mm-hmm. So we have to reinvent the city and reinvent the community, and there is a book called America Beyond Capitalism by an economist from the University of Maryland, Gar Alperovitz. Strange sounding name, but he has really figured this out. How we can relocalize successfully and with prosperity.
Wow, that sounds like a good book to have. Do you have democratic, or do you have community voting and so on in your little area in Ithaca?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Absolutely. The people here are so friendly toward one another. I've never been in a place this warm and friendly. Just, you can talk to somebody on the street, and he might be the chairman of the computer department or math department at Cornell, way high up. And he'll talk to you like you're his second cousin. The people around here are like this, and they're involved in the community. We elected last year, just a year ago, September, we elected the youngest mayor in American history.
Wow.
His name is Savante Myrick. And he has an interesting story. Briefly, he was his mother and his sisters and brothers lived out of their car for a number of years. They were so poor, abandoned by the father, and the mother worked three jobs just to get them into an apartment, and they struggled along. He's like Barack Obama. He's of mixed racial background, and he struggled, but he was very, very smart. He got into Cornell. And he succeeded and graduated at the top of his class and was so liked and appreciated, they asked him to take the job as head of the Alumni Association, which at Cornell is a very big post. And then he got involved in Ithaca, settling here on the town board. And last year, he ran against three other candidates and won by 57% of the vote. Hmm. And last year when he won that election, he was 24 years old.
Oh my gosh, what a guy. And we're going to have to draw to a close here, but what you're telling us is that there are some bright lights popping up in the middle of this incredibly, what would we say, egregious power experience that we're all...
Well, it is, and we have to look also, the Middle East is blowing up. It's just blowing. I mean, most of the nations are either having revolutions and have overthrown their governments or in the process of doing it. Where we have concentrated, where oil, the center of oil culture has been in the Middle East. And there, you know, it's like we come in December 21st this year to the end of the Mayan long count, a just under 5,200-year cycle. And when our civilizations began 5,200 years ago, the ancient Mesopotamian civilizations, Egypt, Babylonia, and now, guess what? Those same regions, those same areas are ending. They're coming to an end.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
Where the origin. And there is something about all of that that is very meaningful at this time to all of us,
wow,
that it is time for this great consciousness change and breakthrough. And each one of us in our lives can make that commitment personally and make that commitment to our communities and to our country and be a part of whatever each one of you out there does well. And if you're a part of doing something that you love very well, you're going to be a part, an important piece of this gigantic puzzle that I think will be assembled and come together in the next decade.
And if it's 5,200 years in cycles, 2020 is not a very long period of time from now, is it?
It is not.
To make changes.
It is not.
Linda,
and we're on the verge. I mean, we're getting there.
Yay! Well, listen, tell everybody the name of your new book. It's not out yet, but What Next is a very good book for people to get hold of if you want to get kind of a... What is it? The survival...
A survival guide to the 21st century. And my next book is called Fast Forward. And it hopefully will be published in December of this year before the big Mayan long count ends on December 21st.
Before the end of the world, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't think, as I said, we're not getting off that easily.
I don't really think it's the end of the world. I was just being funny.
No.
And but, how do people get hold of you and get your newsletter, which is really wonderful, too?
Oh, okay. My online newsletter, which goes up the first of every month on my website, is soothesayer, SOOTHESAYER.com.
Wonderful.
And you can buy my book on either off of that website, or you can buy it on Amazon.com, or you could order it at bookstores. But my second book is not out yet. You can buy my first book, but my second book will be out shortly.
Well, your first book is a terrific reference for what's been going on and what is going to go on for a while. You have some great, we didn't talk about this and we're out of time, but you have some great futuristic descriptions in your What Next book. It's wonderful.
Yes.
You know.
Well, great. And I have certainly enjoyed this interview with you, Veronica. I love coming on your show and speaking to your wonderful listeners.
Well, I hope you'll come back again because I love it too. I'm all charged up now.
Okay. Terrific. I would love to. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure and everyone else's who's listening. Many blessings, everyone. And thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters and Linda Sherman. And email me, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com for feedback, suggestions for guests, or maybe if you want a session, or even just to make contact with Linda, although you can get her at soothesayer.com. So thank you for listening. Good night.